The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1 with All Care Pharmacy. Expert advice to keep the whole family healthy at All Care, the largest Irish-owned pharmacy brand.
Yeah, 51551 for text. Now, 9 years ago this weekend, Ezra Uiron left her husband and her two-year-old son behind at their home in Clondalkin in Dublin to go to the shops. She never returned. Ezra's car was found later in Bray. Ezra's sister, Berna Fidan, who lives in London, has never given up hope of finding Ezra and regularly travels to Ireland to seek help from the public. And she's with me now in studio today. Thanks for coming in, Berna.
Thank you.
So just Ezra's Uiron, that's the...
Uiron.
Right. Now, you come back to Ireland every year around this time on the anniversary.
Always.
And you're always here for Missing Persons Day as well.
Yeah.
You've never... It's 9 years on now.
Unfortunately. Yeah.
You were Ezra's older sister.
You are
Ezra's older sister, isn't it? See, you still talk about her in the present, don't you?
Yes.
Yeah. So tell us a bit about Ezra then.
She's just a beautiful soul. You know, she was a beautiful soul. She loved people. She loved making people happy as well, you know. And it was just a shock to everybody when she just disappeared like that. None of it made any sense at all. And we're just pleading that we know someone's out there that knows something. They just need to come forward and let us know, because it's just getting harder and harder. It doesn't get any easier each year.
How many people are in the family, in your family?
Well, there's myself, my brother, my mum now. Dad had passed away. My two girls and my brother's three children. Yeah.
And this has become your life's work, Berna, has it?
Well, it has. You know, it's taken over all our lives, really. But, you know, we still have to carry on, you know, as best we can. But it's not easy.
I'd imagine you think about Ezra every day.
Every single day.
Yeah.
Not a day goes past without her name being mentioned. People asking me, have I heard anything? You know, there's many people over in London that know me. And, you know, they'll phone me, they'll come in and see me, you know, from my workplace and stuff like that. So, but every day somebody will ask, you know, has there been any news?
Mm.
And unfortunately, I just can't say yes.
Yeah. Well, it's not for want of trying on your part.
Oh, God, no.
No.
I mean, I've tried everything I can. You know, the first 3 months when she first went missing, I stayed here. I stopped working. I was backwards and forwards. You know, I was literally just coming back home for change of clothes, picking up my own medication and everything, and coming back again, you know, doing all the newspaper, you know, articles, you know, the appeals. As many postering as we possibly could. We had a lot of public support. They'd come out to Bray, you know, to walk the Wicklow Mountains with us and everything.
So let's go back then to how Ezra ended up in Ireland.
Ezra got married. She had a job in a pathology lab in a hospital in London. When she met her husband, got married, you know, they were there for about a year and a bit, and he then got a job offer here. So they moved because of the job offer, and they thought it would be a sort of a different start for them, a better life for them. And they came over here because of that, really. And she was here for about 4 years before she went missing.
Right. And she lived out in Clondalkin.
Yep.
And they had a child. What age was Emin?
Emin was 2.5 when Ezra went missing. I mean, he was her world. You know, she so wanted a baby. And, you know, you'd speak to Ezra and within a couple of seconds she'd start talking about her son and taking out pictures on her phone. And, you know, everything would be around him.
And there was still a big connection between the family in London.
Oh, of course. You know, I mean, she would be on the phone to us every other day, or we would be phoning her. You know, she'd constantly be on the phone to make sure Mum and Dad was okay and stuff at the time, because Dad was still alive. And, yeah, I mean, she'd fly over to London every 6 weeks to see us, you know, 6 to 8 weeks max, you know.
So you were very much in her life.
All the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, all the time. We was always in contact, you know. Even if she couldn't get hold of me, she was on the phone to my daughters. My mum, you know, somebody, her friends in London, she was, you know, she'd come over. We'd always make, you know, we'd try and make arrangements for all her friends and us to meet up and go out to dinner together and stuff like that. So.
And your mum was planning on coming over to Dublin that week?
That week, that same week.
To stay for how long?
A month or so.
And why was that? Why was she coming over?
Well, Ezra came over in January 2011. And every time she came over, she'd say to Mum, you know, come over and stay with me for a bit as well. So, you know, she said to Mum, you know, just come over and stay with me. You've got nothing to do here. She goes, you know, spend some time with your grandson as well. And she said, I'm inviting Ezra's mum as well, so you can fly out together. But she'll probably sort of stay about 10 days. You can stay longer because I'm home with
her mother-in-law. She was
a mother-in-law. Yeah. So she invited both the mums over.
Yeah.
And she said to Mum, when you're ready to go back, I'll fly back with you. She booked all the flights, made all the arrangements. Mm. And we kept in touch the whole time, up to the time when she disappeared.
Yeah. So it was a Wednesday morning.
It was Wednesday morning, yeah.
Yeah, and it was this week, if you like, because it was midterm.
Yeah, it was midterm.
And
it
that's
was
sort of half important.
Yeah.
And herself and her husband only had one car.
Yeah, they shared a car.
Right, and what was the deal with the car?
So basically, normally she would take him to work and then, you know, she'd keep the car for the rest of the day just in case she needed to go out with the baby. And then in the evening, she'd go and pick him up again.
Right.
That's how it was. And occasionally, if he said, you know, I'm going to go to the gym, so I'll take the car for the day. And that was nothing unusual either. You know, he would take the car occasionally.
So on this particular day, then?
That's what happened.
What happened?
He'd said that, oh, I'm going to use the car today so I can go to the gym on the way home. And my sister said to him, well, if you're going to take the car while you're getting ready for work, keep an eye on Emmy. Let me just nip out, buy a few bits I need. And then when I come back, you can take the car and I don't need to go out again.
All right.
And that was it.
And that was the last conversation she had with her husband.
Yeah. And then she was never seen again.
Right. And how far was it from the house to the shops?
2-3 minutes.
Yeah.
2-3 minutes, that's all.
So he was expecting her back within 20
minutes.
Well,
yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, you know, he said that she left the house 7:15 the latest, because he needed the car back to go to work.
So he was watching the clock.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Of course. And so it was just unusual because, I mean, I spoke to her on the Sunday prior to her going missing. So she went missing on a Wednesday. I spoke to her on the Sunday and she said to me then, she goes, oh, I forgot a few bits to get while I was in London. Mm. Gave me a shopping list of spices and stuff she wanted me to send with Mum. On the Monday, she phoned one of her friends because it was her friend's son's birthday to wish him happy birthday. On Tuesday, her neighbour saw her, you know, taking out rubbish, and she said to her, what's this spring cleaning in February? And she said, well, the mums are coming over. Oh. I'm getting house ready. When I spoke to her on the Sunday, she goes, oh, I'm going to surprise the mums because I'm booking a spa and a posh restaurant because it's going to be my birthday while they're here. Because her birthday's on the 1st of March.
Right.
So it'll be yet another birthday.
She was 37, going to be 38.
Yeah.
She was a striking looking woman.
Definitely.
Yeah. I've seen pictures, green eyes.
Yeah.
You have Turkish heritage, so sallow skin, dark hair. And had she got her hair dyed blonde at that stage? No.
So, yeah, she had highlighted hair.
Highlighted her hair, right, okay.
Yeah. I mean, she used to wear her hair very dark as well, so people know her with dark hair and light hair. So
when did you realise there was something wrong?
Her husband phoned us in the evening. He didn't want to alarm us and worry us, he said. But he'd already phoned the Garda. The Garda had told him, you have to wait 48 hours for a missing person. And, you know, by the evening, when there was still no sign of her, like he said, he phoned her phone several times. It was just constantly going on to message. And then he said, like, then he obviously called us because there was just no sign of her. And I said to him, I don't care what the Garda is saying. You need to take a picture of her, go there and at least let them find the car. Because if she's driven with the car is somewhere. It's got to be picked up. And then it was 11 o'clock that same Wednesday night that he phoned back to say they found the car in Bray.
Right.
They did do an initial helicopter search. By next morning, I was there anyway. I made the arrangement straight away and just came straight over.
What was that flight like for you?
It was a nightmare because I didn't know what to expect. I thought I was just going to find her, put her on the plane and bring her back. That was my... I actually bought a return ticket, thinking, okay, by Monday I'm taking her back. But then obviously that didn't
happen.
Didn't happen.
So the car was found out in a car park in Bray.
Yeah.
And the last message, the last signal they got from Ezra's phone was on
around
Bray Head.
Yeah. Okay. But then it's a mobile. Anyone could have that mobile.
Yeah.
That doesn't prove that she was there. Not to me anyway.
Mm.
You know, it's a mobile phone. It gets carried. So it could be anywhere.
What happens then? You know, because you were all over it. You stayed here, as you said, for 3 months after Ezra disappeared. So you were constantly in conversations with An Garda Síochána.
Yeah.
Did you immediately start looking at CCTV footage, or what happens?
Well, they obviously had to wait for CCTV footage to come down and stuff like that. So, you know, everything took what seemed like forever to us, because I'm running around, you know, we're running around trying to think, you know, where could she be? Where, you know, it was constantly in Bray, because that's where the car was found, you know, walking the mountains. I mean, I've walked from, you know, Bray's Head to Greystones so many times, backwards and forwards, and across other parts of Bray's Head and stuff like
that.
Just hoping that I would come across something of hers.
Yes.
Eventually, when they came back and they'd, you know, because when I got there on the Thursday morning, her car was still in Bray, and it was Thursday late afternoon that the Gardaí took the car away. And then it was quite a few days after that that they came back to say, you know, due to from forensics, it was only her and her husband's fingerprints in the car, but her purse was actually in the boot of the car. Now, we're talking about a purse no bigger than a phone. And I said, why would she put her purse in the boot? We're not talking about a handbag.
That's interesting, yeah.
And I've said, did something happen to her that, you know, if I was going to go for a walk or anything, I'm not going to put my purse in the boot. I'm going to put it in the glove compartment or under my seat or something. I'm not going to physically get out of the car to throw it in the boot, because it's just a little purse.
So you've thought about that a lot in the last...
I have thought. I mean, it's done my brain in thinking
years.
About
so,
it,
yeah,
you know, because I've gone, think outside the box. Was she in the boot of that car?
Her purse fell out of her pocket or...
Yeah, you know. I know they haven't said, you know, they found any forensics of anyone else's prints, but then, you know, gloves, whatever, you... Not necessarily leaving any prints, are you?
Yeah.
So,
when you got there then, and the car was there, did you immediately start doing your own work, investigating?
Well, yeah. I mean, we were walking around up and down Bray, stopping people to say, you know,
in the days and weeks after.
Well, yes. I mean, I literally was making sure I was getting to Bray 8 a.m. in the morning. Sitting on the wall where her car was parked, just to see who was actually walking past at this time every single morning. And it was mainly the same sort of people, walking their dogs, taking a jog, whatever.
People have
routines, and they would stop and talk to me, you know, because they realised, you know, I was sitting there with a poster in my hand, handing it out to everybody, going around everywhere. And, you know, they'd stop and talk, and they said, you know, and everyone didn't see her.
Mm.
Because if we had, she'd be a different face to us. Like, we're stopping off and saying, are you okay? We would have said exactly the same to her.
Yeah.
You know, so nobody remembers seeing her there.
And what time did the car hit Bray at?
The car hit Bray around 20 past 8-ish.
Okay.
That sort of time.
After leaving Clondalkin at...
About 20 past 7. And it shouldn't take an hour anyway. It doesn't take an
hour.
Even with traffic. I mean, it's half-term week. There's not going to be that much traffic anyway.
Yeah.
But we've done that trip so many times.
In
traffic and out of traffic, because we're here at the same time every year. And we've literally started that journey at 20 past 7 in the morning. See, her number plate was first read at the power station roundabout, which is only a 4-minute drive from her home.
Power
City roundabout.
Oh, Power City roundabout,
sorry.
Yes.
Power
in Clondalkin.
Yeah, in Clondalkin. Yeah. So that's only like a 4-minute drive from her house.
Yes.
You know, okay, 5-6 at a push. But then their cameras showed that it was just before 8 o'clock. Now, that's half an hour.
Could her husband have got the time wrong?
Oh, if he's going to work, how could he have done?
I know, but what I'm saying,
you know,
is...
I mean, but even so,
yeah.
Okay, so it's not 20 past 7, it's
half past seven,
but it's still going to not take you till 8 o'clock to get to that spot.
Okay, right.
It's just still a 4-5 minute journey.
So in your mind then, that's an oddity. There's something.
Well, yeah, because there. I mean, I've always said, you know, was she flagged down? Did she stop for something? You know.
What are your theories?
Did something happen there?
And what are your theories?
Oh, do you know what? My mind's a sieve at the moment because I don't know what to think anymore.
Yeah.
I truly don't know what to think.
You've probably
anymore.
Gone through every permutation of what
might
have
happened. Oh,
do you know,
you go through so many scenarios in your head that I just, you become numb to it sometimes.
Yeah.
But I just don't know what to think anymore. But I know someone, you know, someone must have seen, someone must have heard, someone's out there. And they know, you know, no one's going to disappear off the face of the earth and no one's seen or heard. We're just begging that person to come forward, you know.
So there's that. It took longer than it should have to get to the Power City roundabout from the house.
And then from the Power City to Bray. Yes, it was the right
time. It was the right time.
Time.
Okay.
Yeah.
So if, for example, somebody got into the car with her or whatever, although there's no fingerprints, and then decided to drive her to Bray. That seems that could have happened. Had she ever been to Bray before?
Several times.
She had?
Yeah. So she knew the Bray area because it was one of the closer places, you know, to go and get some fresh air and stuff like that. So, you know, they'd take the baby down there and whatever. Yeah, so they used to go to Bray.
Right.
Or if, you know, one of her friends came to visit her from London and then she took them down to Bray for the day as well.
And would they do that walk, the Bray Head to Greystones walk? Or?
No, not all the way.
No.
It's literally just up to the, you know,
yes.
the little walk up to the top to have a look at the scenery and then come back down again, you know, but it wouldn't be all the way.
So the CCTV caught the Twingo, was it?
What,
Renault Twingo, is
Renault
it?
Twingo.
Renault Twingo. It got that on the road and then went into a car park behind the amusements and then came out again, went into another car park.
It went into the same car park.
But there was no CCTV on the second time.
No.
Why was that?
Because when the car first came down the Strand, it went straight into the car park within less than 30 seconds, left, went back into the one-way system. Then it came out of Convent Avenue where it had a near collision with a Skoda Octavia.
Yeah.
And we begged and begged for that driver to come forward, you know, because if someone's nearly hit you or cut you up, you're going to turn and have a look.
Mm.
And all we wanted to know is, you know,
who was
driving that car? Was she driving? Was there one person? Was there two people?
But the CCTV wasn't clear enough to tell you definitively that Ezra was driving that car.
No.
And you think that it could be somebody else?
It could be.
It could be.
There's always a possibility. Okay. It could be anybody.
Now, you know,
because the driving was so erratic,
yes,
it's not even her type of driving.
Now, you know they have new technology now to enhance CCTV footage. Has that come up in your conversations with Angardi?
For years.
Right.
For years. They had it, well, they tried, they said they tried to have it enhanced here. It didn't work. Eventually, years and years later, a few years ago, they managed to get it to London and they said they couldn't do anything there as well.
Okay, okay. So, parked, there's no CCTV of anybody getting out of the car, but then there is a bit of CCTV of a woman walking up towards Bray Head.
See, that's so unrealistic, for the sheer fact is, I've seen an image of that CCTV from the Star Amusement Centre. They allowed me to watch it when her car came in, went out and came back in. That car park was virtually empty at that time of the morning. Now, the Gardaí cameras that watch the Strand is on a swing motion. At 8:30 when her car got to Bray, it was watching the Strand. When it swung round to where they showed me a footage of that woman, that car park was chock-a-block full and it was about 10, 11 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, right, okay.
It was hours later. So that's not realistic.
Did they not have a time code on it, no?
I don't know.
No, okay.
But that car park was so full with loads of people around and everything.
But you're confident that woman wasn't Ezra?
No, that wasn't Ezra. I mean, that was a woman waiting for her dog. They said, oh, it's a woman standing there aimlessly. Yeah. But if you keep watching the footage, she's actually waiting for a dog. As soon as the dog comes and walks past her, she turns and walks behind the dog.
Now, and you know well, but when somebody disappears in circumstances like this, suicide is always mentioned.
Of course.
Yeah.
Give me a body. That's what I say.
Right.
She didn't bury herself. Even if she'd gone into that sea, it would have washed her up somewhere. We had sea searches over and over again. First week, second week. Well, the first week a few times. We had the bone fishermen come out. We had the Limerick crew come out months later as well because they said, you know, it could be washed back months later. So it went over and over again.
Mm.
You know, it wasn't just searched once. The mountain areas were searched. You know, we had the volunteer groups come out with us. They did paragliding over, and then they sort of, you know, letting themselves off the sides of the cliffs to see if they could.
And you've spoken to people who would have an expertise in how dead bodies behave,
yeah,
I'd imagine.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
they would always be washed up, would they?
Somewhere.
Somewhere.
Yeah, of course.
Here, Wales.
Anywhere.
Yeah.
But yeah, but we've not, we haven't had anything.
9 years on.
9 years on.
Yeah.
And it's...
And was there any... Because you've gone through all of this. I'm sorry to go through it again, but just for our listeners. And this is why I was talking to you about the phone calls and your mum and mother-in-law coming over. Was there anything that would suggest that Ezra was in a bad place?
No. Because she was making plans.
Mm.
You know, if they tried to say to me, oh, you know, your dad passed away, maybe that triggered her off. And I said, yeah,
when did your dad pass away?
October.
Okay, and this was February.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I said, okay, dad passed away, but dad was ill for 20 years. And for the last 2 years of his life, he was bedridden on morphine and didn't even know what today was. We was at a stage where we were praying that he would go peacefully and not suffer anymore. So his death wasn't a shock to us.
Right.
Yes, it was sad. Of course it was sad we lost our dad. But, you know, it was a relief also that he wasn't suffering.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Esther came over. You know, she managed to see him before he passed away. She stayed for the funeral. She came back again several times after that. You know, there was nothing to say that she had any issues with us.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course she missed us. She missed, you know, she missed everybody. It wasn't.
And you were close with Ezra.
Of course
she would have confided in you, I would imagine.
Yeah. But even her closest friends, there was in total shock. Like, but she tells us everything. How can she go without talking to us? And that's why I said, you know, no one can believe that she's just gone off her own will.
I tell you what, we'll get you a glass of water and we'll just give you a couple of minutes. We'll take a commercial break and we'll continue after that.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, we're speaking to Berna, whose sister Ezra disappeared 9 years ago this weekend in Bray. Well, that's what they say. It could have been somewhere else, you think, maybe.
Maybe.
Yeah. And how is your mum?
She's not very well. She hasn't been very well for years. And as years go on, her health deteriorates some more. But she's holding on. She's holding on as best as she can. I mean,
and whenever I saw that, when people say to you, "Could it have been suicide?" Yeah, like, and I'm sure I saw a documentary where the detective in charge sat you down and suggested.
Did I want to hit that detective?
suggested, but you can see why people would.
Yeah,
can't you, Berna?
I can see, can see, but there needs to be a reason.
Mm.
You know, you're not going to make plans, bring your mother over, invite your mother-in-law and then decide, oh, I'm going to commit suicide.
Yeah.
See, my sister, if that was her intention at all, the month before when she came over with her husband and the baby, she had a meeting to attend. So she came back 3 days earlier than her husband and the baby. So she had 3 whole days to do what she wanted, if that was her intention.
Did she actually need stuff in the shop?
Well, I wouldn't know.
No, I know. Yeah. I know. That's the question, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I said to her husband at the time, like, what was she going out for? He goes, well, I'm not sure. He goes, you know, she said, she's going to pick up some milk and stuff. And he goes, maybe she wanted to buy a packet of cigarettes. And he goes, because I don't really like her smoking.
Uh-huh.
And she didn't want me to go out and buy it.
Right.
But
yeah,
I don't know.
And I've spoken to families of missing persons before, and some families don't like to in any way imagine what might have happened. Where are you on that?
I don't want to imagine that she's suffering.
Okay. Do you think she's still alive?
I think I'm getting to a stage where I don't know. Mm. I don't know. You know, you hope that she's still alive. There's that hope she's still alive. But I wouldn't want her to have suffered all this time.
Mm.
I think that's another thing that eats at me, that if she's being kept somewhere and she's suffering.
So that's one of the theories you've entertained over the years, that...
Well, you think of this, don't you? I mean, is it a possibility? You hear of all these cases where women have been locked in cellars and rooms and whatnots, you know? So, of course, you know, that's also played on our minds. But I'd hate to think that that's what she's going through.
Yeah.
Sometimes I think maybe she has, you know, she's dead somewhere and she's been buried somewhere, but we have no proof of any of this.
Mm.
So we have no closure, which makes it even harder.
Yeah, it's a big open, you know, there's big some, open there's, sore.
Yeah, I mean, there's some families who know that their loved one has passed and they can't find the body. But we don't even know if she's dead or alive.
Mm.
Which, you know, I mean, it's bad for all of us, but I don't know which is worse.
Mm. And you've been over, as we said, for Missing Persons Day and this time every year for the last 9 years. Have you had any leads? None. In that time? None.
I've, you know, not a lot of stones unturned. I mean, we've tried to follow up on anything anyone said to us, you know. I mean, we've even gone down, like, where mediums have said, you know, it could be in this area.
Oh, mediums, you've gone to mediums, yeah.
Or they've approached us as well. But I'm not sweeping them under the carpet because, you know, you're thinking, okay, there could be some truth in it. So I've gone into the area, put posters up and hoping that someone will come forward because I'm thinking, well, any information, because you're grabbing to see, you know, any little bit of string that you can grab and pull to see if I can get some information from anybody. But nobody's coming up with any solid information at all that could lead us in the right direction.
This is probably the most painful thing to think. Like, if Ezra took her own life, there may be no witnesses. And there still is no body, and I can't explain that, but there, you know, she would have waited till there was nobody around and then...
Yeah, but where is the body?
Yeah, where is the body, yeah.
So that's why I can't take suicide seriously on this.
Yeah.
I can't accept that it's suicide.
You have to mind yourself as well.
Yes, I do.
Yeah. And have you thought about a time when, and that you won't come over to Ireland every year?
If I physically am in a bed, okay. I can't move.
Oh, only if you can't.
Yeah. But, you know, I don't intend to stop coming over because she's my little baby sister, my only sister.
Yeah.
You can't give up, can you?
No, I can't imagine what it's like. I actually can't imagine.
Because we're a small family anyway, you know. And I don't know. I mean, my mum's not well. My brother's had a heart attack. And it's taken its toll on all of us.
Yeah. What do other people do, Erna? And I know it's different for everybody, but, you know, like, is there counselling? And I know there must be...
Oh, do you know what? They suggested I went to counselling just to sort of... help me, you know, deal with it. I think it just put me in a worse mood because all I did was sit there and cry and I said, I feel worse coming out of this than it. So it's not something that suited me. I don't think it suits everybody.
Okay.
But
maybe somebody's just listening today because you haven't done national radio before. You've been in a few reports, but we haven't sat down and had this chat.
Yeah, we've done sort of things like
East Coast
crime,
radio
yeah,
and crime
call
yes,
and things like that. But, you know, you obviously have different listeners to, you know, because not everybody reads the same paper, not everybody listens to the same radio station. So I'm hoping today that I'm reaching people that have never heard this story before.
So it was the 23rd of February 2011. It was midterm, Wednesday morning. So a big question mark for you is that between Clondalkin and the Power City roundabout, did something happen there?
What happened?
And then when she got to the car park in Bray, where did she go from there? Did anybody see her? That Octavia, Skoda Octavia, that there was a near miss there.
Yeah.
Is that person, do they know that they're that person and just has been reluctant to come forward, and maybe now is the time they'll come forward and they might...
Oh, please do. You know, we just need someone to come forward. You know, we're begging for someone to come forward. Then somebody must know.
Yeah. Okay. Mind yourself.
Thank you.
It's torturous what you're going through, and I hope you get some resolution and, as you say, some closure at some time in the near future.
God willing.
Yeah. Verna, thank you very much.
Thank you very much for having me here. Thank you.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.